available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. One day after Pac-12 Media Day, or I guess 2 days after Pac-12 Media Day, we're going to record a show in person. We've got a special guest in studio. Maybe we'll have her jump on a little bit or whatever. But Keely Yort's here. She's like, shake her head. Why are you even talking about me? But
you literally just turned her mic off.
I did. We could turn it back on if we needed to. Like, you know, if I say something dumb, she was there at Pac-12 Media Day too, so she could correct me. If she, you know, we'll have her raise her hand if there's something going on. But, you know, they recorded a podcast before this, David, so the mic should be all warmed up. We don't have to warm
them up. I feel warmed up. I feel ready to go. I'm raring to go, too,
and I want to let everyone know how to get a hold of us. If you want to email us, we got a bunch of emails. David to read, pac12podcast@gmail.com is the email address. Couple voicemails too. If you want to call us and leave us a voicemail or send us a text, it's the same number, 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast. I did a lot of tweeting over there on Tuesday, Pac-12 Media Day. The website is pac12podcast.com, where you can find all the old episodes. And if you want to discuss all this stuff with fellow Pac-12 fans, reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions. But more importantly, go over to Apple Podcasting app, your Apple Podcasting app. Follow the Podcast of Champions. Rate us with 5 stars. Write whatever you want about us. Talk trash, whatever you want. But just give us that 5-star rating. We will love it. And there's going to be a reward, David, for some good reviews here coming up. I don't know if we have any today, but we got some rewards.
Well, we've got 3 to choose from.
Ooh. So, okay. Tell you what.
All right.
I'm going to.
Number one.
Before we do this, so we got our friends over at Jockey, our buddy Tom. Been great to us. Send us stuff. Love Jockey.
I'm wearing a Jockey polo right now.
I wore one. I'll tell you when I got to meet the conference commissioner, George Klyavkov.
Kalashnikov.
Kalashnikov. Hold on. I got this somewhere.
Kalashnikov.
So got to meet him during his tour. We'll get all that later. But I was wearing my Jockey Pac-12 polo for that one. But they're really nice, and they provided us with a whole bunch of gift cards. Not $100 gift cards.
These are
Jockey.
Good gift cards.
These are good gift cards. Of the 3 reviews we got, our favorite's going to get $100 gift cards.
There we go. Awesome. This is incentivizing you to leave reviews over the next
5 stars,
few weeks.
Yes.
All right. So first up, we have this from Marl, 5-star review. Subject line, smoking, steaming, piles of poo. And then the body is 5 stars.
Oh.
I like it. It's short, succinct, exactly what we ask for.
True.
Rotness, another 5-star review. Subject line, huge staff rim job. Holy shit, Ryan. And this is a reference to our last episode where you referred to one program having a huge staff and then attempted to say rim shot, but instead said rim job. So also, I like that. It's referential. This is from USC Nick. It's a 5-star review. Love the pod. The Pac-12 doesn't get enough attention, so I love this podcast. Being a USC fan who lives in Virginia, it's nice to get my Pac-12 news on my own schedule. I have one question that I think plays a big part on the Pac-12's future with conference realignment on the forefront of all of our minds. The Pac-12 needs a new TV deal. I believe that this is the reason Klyavkov was hired, which is to negotiate a killer TV deal. With all this said, do you think if a great TV deal is negotiated that keeps the Pac-12 safe from being chipped away at? My gut says we are not headed to 4 power conferences nationwide. North, South, East, and West, 16 teams each. Top 3 teams in each region get invited to the CFB playoff. Is it really just as simple as the Pac-12 getting a great TV deal that keeps them safe for years to come? Thanks.
Oh, thanks for that one. I mean, the 16-team thing, let's do that real quick.
Sure.
I think it would be great, but you would need a governing body. Like, basically, the SEC went to 16, and they're just grabbing... Like, if you were going to do four 16 teams, you'd have to be like, okay, well, SEC, you can't have Texas and Oklahoma. We're going to put those in the Midwest one or whatever it is. Like, no one's going to do that. So, I have a hard time picturing that happening.
None of this evenly divided stuff works without a centralized body that's right. Actually organizing the sport and distributing revenue evenly. So I don't see it as likely. I think what you're going to see, well, we'll talk about this a lot more later, I'm sure, but I think you're going to see two poles emerge. The SEC and the Big Ten, and teams slowly or quickly starting to move those two ways.
I think I'd say the one good thing about the Pac-12 is it's becoming a regionalized sport. It is. And you can't lose the West Coast. You've already lost the Northeast, you know, the biggest media market. You can't lose the West Coast. So I feel like there's going to be some strength there. It could, I mean, is it a ACC partnership where it's a bi-coastal kind of thing? I don't think you can neglect the West Coast. So I feel like, you know, when you're talking about where the West Coast is situated, the late games and stuff, sometimes that's a disadvantage. But in this case, you have a lockdown and you can't lose those two time zones, you know? Yeah. And I feel like that's a positive. But it's sort of like, you know, what's like one of the best defenses of Moscow, you know, in Russia? It's like Napoleon had a hard time. It's like, it's just hard to get to, you know, and the Pac-12 is kind of hard to get to sometimes. So even if someone wanted to poach USC and Oregon and stuff, it's pretty far away. You know, Napoleon didn't have a really good time with that. Hitler had a hard time. Maybe the geographic, you know, disadvantages maybe work to the Pac-12's advantage as a defense mechanism of getting poached and kind of losing its luster as a conference.
Yeah, the question is just the increased marginalization. But we'll get into that, I'm sure, a lot more later when we talk about Pac-12 media days.
Which one do you like?
I probably, I'm torn between steaming piles of poo and huge staff rim job. The problem with USC's Nick, it's a five-star review. I love it.
You had a hard time reading it. So
two things. One, the length.
Yes.
Two, this is not the time for questions. We get to questions later in the show.
True.
So it's a couple of dings right there.
I think the huge staff, you want to go there?
I think huge staff rim job.
Yeah.
All right. So Rottenness, please email us with your
address. Yes. We'll put this in the mail for you.
Yes.
And you will get a $100 gift card to Jockey.
There you go.
Tom Hecker, our buddy over there. Thank you, Tom, for those. And yeah, that's a good one. All right. So, Pac-12 Media Day.
We just gave away the first Jockey gift card to huge staff rim job.
I think that's perfect.
I think it's beautiful. I think it's exactly what this show is.
I can't wait. We'll let you know. Dave and I each have a gift card, too. We're going to, you know, go online, shop, and get some stuff. We'll let you know what we get and what we like. But it was it was a good day just to be back with people. Seeing the national media people, seeing the beat writers, you know, hey, there's Chris Cartman hey, there's Tracy Pearson. I haven't seen Tracy for a while.
Your holiday.
You get these people. Kim Grenolds from Washington.
You got to eat some free brownie brookies things.
Brookies were pretty good. Not as good as other people were saying, but I think they're really good. But they're a little crumbly for
me.
Well,
you are a real sweets aficionado.
I know my sweets.
Yeah.
My cookie, they're good. Like cookie on top of a brownie, it's like looks like a cupcake.
Who can go wrong, right?
I mean, you know, cookie on top of a brownie looks like a cupcake. Like, yeah, okay, I get you.
You also need a little bit of ice cream, maybe sandwich it between some stuff.
Mm.
That's what we're really talking about.
I got an extra one. I should have brought it for you, the brookie.
But maybe. You didn't. You just ate it, right?
No, I actually have one or two at the house, so I'll give you one. But overall, I thought it was well done. They moved it to the W, right across from the Pantages Theater, so you can see like the Hamilton signs and all that stuff. And you know, you feel bad for George Kliavkov. He takes over, and 30 minutes before he's about to give his speech, which, you know, he's nervous. He's speaking to all these, you know, all the media, this is his first, like, you know, he's the face of the conference, and this is his first chance to be out in front of everyone and talk to them. And we find out that Texas and Oklahoma are, you know, officially are asking to join the SEC. So all anyone was going to talk about is conference realignment. You know, he had to change a lot of stuff on the fly, I'm sure. So, but, you know, I thought he did a nice job there. He was up with Rob Mullins and Merton Hanks. talking about stuff. The only thing that Merton Hanks said that it was a misnomer that the Pac-12 officiating was bad. So that was the only like clunker I thought that they did. For the most part, though, they addressed a lot of the things that Larry Scott wouldn't address. So I like that. And then, you know, going through all the coaches and the players, I thought it was well done. And, overall, I liked what they had to say. Started off the day talking about Terry Donahue, really hadn't a lot of chance to address that with him passing away, one of the legends in the conference. So I thought he did a good job. And, the coaches, there was definitely some interesting stuff, and we'll get to some of that stuff. But overall, I thought it was good. I don't know from what you read and stuff, anything stand out to you?
No, I mean, I got the same impression. I thought Kliavkov struck basically the right note, even on short notice with dealing with the realignment stuff. I think it's right that he says we're not going to just force expansion just to expand. We're not going to add teams just to add teams, but certainly going to evaluate the whole situation. I think, it was clear that their options are open and that they're willing to stay at 12 if that's the right move. I think that probably for the time being, that is the right move, is to just stick at 12 and then see what plays out over the coming years or coming months, depending on how quickly everything else moves. I thought he was, sounded the part and made it very clear that football and to a lesser extent, men's basketball are going to be the focus of the conference.
100%.
They're going to be the driver of the conference. And that's right. Much more so than Larry Scott ever seemed to really understand or indicate. I thought the note about parity,
mentioned that a couple of times,
that not being the focus, we're going to be focused on trying to make, college football playoff and all that. I mean, I think it's the right idea. The question is now with all of this stuff moving along is whether he's still a big proponent of a 12 team expansion to the playoff with, the SEC consolidating, more and more power, whether that even makes sense anymore.
He talked about that a little. Said he does. He likes it, but I think from the other people we talked to in the room, he said they would like they would like to make some changes and stuff to it. But for the most part, he likes the idea. The problem is, it was just like the Big 12 and the SEC and like Notre Dame and the Mountain West guy. Like those were the people in the room, but they kind of went wait instead of 12 teams, let's do it. It's like they kind of made this whole plan. And before other people even knew about it. So I think everyone else would have liked to got involved at some point. So I think you're going to still see some people getting involved. But the whole Texas-Oklahoma thing, I think, sort of puts that on hold. Like, I don't think you can change the playoff until some of this conference realignment stuff, especially two huge brands in the game moving conferences. And they're, officially today, were accepted by the SEC. So... whenever that could be 4 years from now, it could be tomorrow. I don't know, but
it could be next year. Yeah. It could be as early as 2022 if they work out the buyout or whatever from their Big 12 contract.
But yeah, I think he mostly liked the 12 team thing, but there were some there's some details there you could kind of work out. I did like the parody stuff, and it's also you could see the look on his face when he was talking about the teams that were interested. There's a lot of programs that were interested in joining the Pac-12. Now with the Big 12. Getting torpedoed, there's going to be a lot of programs there trying to figure out what to do. Do you want to go to the American Athletic, or would you rather go to like the Pac-12 and stuff? And I think if you're at Oklahoma State or Texas Tech, it makes sense if you would want to join the Pac-12. I don't think the Pac-12 is all that interested. They don't have to be, you talk about the pie getting bigger, but there's more pieces. So it's not about the pie getting bigger. It's about the pieces of pie.
Yeah. Honestly, nothing left in the Big 12 makes a ton of sense. I think it actually makes more sense to go after, if you were going to expand, it's more like the AAC because you might get the Houston market or you might get, I don't know if you're interested in SMU, but you can get Dallas then. But nothing left in the Big 12 is really attractive, and they're not going to pick Baylor. Like, that's just not a cultural fit at all.
Yeah.
Baylor makes sense in the SEC. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see what the appetite is for the SEC and the Big 10 to get even bigger now. Because I think if you're the Big 10, you have to start thinking about not just matching what the SEC just did, but what is the SEC going to try to do going forward, and what does the Big 10 need to do in terms of their future to maintain some sort of balance of power with the SEC.
Yeah. And what
And that's going to be a huge part of, I think, the next couple of years.
Yeah. One of the more consistent message that you'd hear from Larry Scott and George Klyavkov, you know, reiterated was they do own 100% of their media rights. So, you know, there's a benefit to that. He felt.
Do you
know
that I own 100% of my media rights?
Yeah. I don't know why you're not, like, people aren't, like, Amazon should be calling you.
I don't get it.
Let's do a documentary on Dave's beard. But the conference as a whole, he liked the fact, he felt like Texas and Oklahoma moving. The Pac-12 owns the Mountain, you know, the Mountain Time Zone and the Pacific Time Zone. There's a uniqueness there. And, you know, so he liked that. He liked owning 100% of the media rights. Not a lot's going to be done until these contracts and stuff come up. So he kind of comes into the job, which, like, he can fix some stuff. There's some low-hanging fruit. Stupid things Larry Scott did, he can fix. Some of the stuff can't be fixed or attempted to be fixed until all the media rights come up in 2024.
Right. Yeah. And so that's going to be a challenge. And it's not good timing for this to happen right now, with still a couple of years to go until the media rights deal is renegotiated.
I mentioned the misnomer for Merton Hank said about Pac-12 officiating. I thought that was a miss, but they didn't have any comment on the Arizona State situation. So that was weird. But I guess early on in the day, Dave, the Nick Rolovich, you know, Washington State comes up. So the way this works, just if you're not there, it's a long room, not as wide, but it's very long. And in the front is a stage, cameras and all this stuff set up. There's tables all, you know, throughout the room where all the media can sit. And the front is where, like, George Klyavkov would speak, or the coaches would be there. And then in the way back of the room on the other side would be the players. And if you were, like, closer to the back, you could hear their microphones. If you were closer to the front, you could hear the coach's microphone. The only coach that wasn't there, we mentioned this last week, it was, like, breaking as we were recording the show, Nick Rolovich. It was the weirdest, like, I don't know if you saw an eclipse of this, David. He was on Zoom, so you see him on a TV screen. He was speaking very soft. He was, like, looking down. None of the gregarious personality that he's had. It just seemed like he was forced to read something. It just didn't seem right at all. He said he wasn't going to get into why he's not vaccinated, personal reasons. He encouraged people to, you know, he didn't say vaccines are bad. He said he don't think they're bad. He encouraged people to go look into them for themselves. But it just was weird. And he filibustered for like 11 and a half minutes, like talking. And you get about 25. Chip Kelly didn't say a single word, just was like, take questions. The other end of the spectrum was Rolovich, who talked for 11 and a half minutes, like trying to get like basically half the time. Mm-hmm. So you couldn't ask questions, and people asked questions, and he just wasn't, you know, going there as far as the, but that was a really weird one, just as far as like getting a curveball early on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, you don't know exactly what his personal reasons are, but I think if his personal reasons had anything to do with, like, I don't know, like an autoimmune disorder or something, maybe they would have found a way to leak that out. So it's, again, as I said last week, it's conspiracy brain, you know, fighting with an apparently emerging victorious over coaching brain, and it obviously unmanned him. He wasn't even his usual self in these in this interview. I would imagine he also got a lot of shit, like a lot of shit in the intervening week. Administration
Pat
at Washington
Chung,
State.
You know, like, yeah.
From everybody, and I think they told him, look, you hold the line on this, and you say it's personal reasons, and I encourage other people to get vaccines if they want to, and we'll, you know, not fire you or whatever. But I think that's why he looked so, honestly, he looked defeated. Like,
yes.
He looked just kind of broken.
We go, like, politically incorrect quite a bit, but, you know, I don't know. It's fun that Keely's in the room, because she's definitely going to look at me and say, you know, those Al-Qaeda videos where, like, you have a hostage and you have to read off a thing. Like, she's face planting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Face palming. Is that
it's
the
a
right?
Little cringeworthy.
Right. But that's, do you know what I'm saying?
I got you. He looked like he was being forced to read something.
Yes, exactly.
Which I respect Washington State all the more for forcing him to read that. obviously, it'd be better if he just got vaccinated, but, you know. Whatever.
His team's 75% vaccinated. That's what he said.
That's got to be on the low end for the league, though.
I think so. Yeah, Washington was like, I think 95% of the roster, he said, was, and like all the whole coaching staff. So,
well, USC, I think it was like 80 or 90%.
Yeah, they're
like,
up there.
Yeah, I think Washington State's at the very low end.
It's funny. Like, sometimes each year there's a theme. Like, obviously people were talking about vaccination rates, also about, conference,
well, it's because I'm going to take everyone a little inside baseball. Oftentimes you come into these things and you actually have no idea what to ask. And then you ask a couple of things and you're like, I'm just going to ask everybody that. And so one person was like, oh God, what do I ask this guy? Vaccinations? And then he's like, oh, you know what? I can ask that of everybody. And that's a little notebook note. Yeah. Great. Going to do it. Journalism, it's a lazy man's game.
But that was a common question. Colorado was mid-90s, I think. That's pretty good. Like, so seems like the Pac-12, from everyone we talked to.
That's cute of Colorado. Last time they were good.
Wow. Oh, gosh.
Mid-90s?
Rim shot.
Is that like a little legacy thing?
I like that. Yeah, little rim shot there. I'm going through my tweets just to kind of remind me of any kind of notes that were going on. But I tweeted out that the main reason...
I love this. It provides you an opportunity to just read your tweets on air. It's great.
Yeah. The main reason to come is the brookies. So it's a brownie and a cookie.
So like you're lower on them now than you were real time.
I liked them for sure. I didn't eat one there.
Are you just being a contrarian now? No. You saw too much hype and then you're like, you know, I got to dial back my own hype.
No, our friends over at Rain of Troy, Alicia was like, this is like the greatest thing ever. And I was like, and I hadn't had it yet because
I saw the Twitter record. Okay. I saw her quote tweet you and I saw you like that tweet.
I did like it.
Like is agreement. All right, Ryan.
But I hadn't eaten one at the time. But
okay.
Now I did. They're good. They're a little crumbly.
So sight unseen, you were willing to concede that these are like the greatest thing
ever.
Just
the idea of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's awesome.
Okay.
And they taste really good. But they were a little crumbly for me.
Yeah.
They were like, they kind of made a mess.
So
like,
it was a texture issue.
A little bit, yeah.
More than a taste.
And it might have been like if you got them right from the bakery or something, it would have been different.
Were they stodgy?
Were they stodgy? No.
You're not a great British baking show fan?
No, I'm not.
Wow, okay.
If that's what they say?
Yeah. I mean, you should be. It seems more like your jam.
My cousin watches that.
Yeah, seems like you should be all over that.
Shotgun liked the apple cup, which was that was the turtle one.
Okay.
I haven't tried that one yet, but the USC UCLA is the OG.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's like chocolate chip cookie. Colorado Utah was peanut butter.
Was the cookie itself, was it just too stiff? Was that what it was?
It was like, more the brownie. Like, so they forced the brownie into like the cup of a cupcake. So I think that made it a little crumbly.
Got it. Are you an edge brownie guy or are you the middle of the pan guy?
Middle.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And we're rarities because most people like the little hard crust.
Yeah, I don't need that.
No. I want it soft and chewy and delicious.
And it's funny because when you eat a cupcake, sometimes I'll take the bottom cake part and eat that, and then I have more icing for my cake, you know. But this is like, it's a brownie, so you don't need to like.
No.
Yeah.
No.
It's different. No. Oregon State was oatmeal raisin. Cal Stanford was a sugar cookie. And Arizona State was a snickerdoodle.
Yeah, I tried to find any kind of thematic appropriateness for any of that, and there really wasn't any.
This was the first time they used rivalries. Usually there's 12 different things, but I guess...
I just don't think they had many for that. I don't think that company had 12 different flavor types.
Yeah. Herm Edwards, did you get any of him?
Yeah, he can't speak about any of this stuff?
He called it a review, not an investigation, not like dossier, anything that was asked like, hey, is this going to affect recruiting? Because you've had like a decommit recently. They didn't say that, but like, and it's like, no, nothing. Everything's the same. Everything's fine, you know?
They're going with the downplay and Stonewall.
Downplay and Stonewall, but there's going to be a shoe dropping at some point, and it's just, we're not sure when. And I think that's why Arizona State was picked third, because you just don't know. They're a really talented team. They could win the South, but.
Did we tell everyone what the picks were? What the media picks?
Oh, we didn't do that. I could pull that up. Do you have it there?
No.
Oh, well, here, I'll pull that up.
Come on, Ryan.
I forgot you don't do stuff. That was the thing.
Right.
Let's see.
Preseason media poll.
Yeah. So.
Hang on. I've got it. Or no, I don't. That's
yeah. So in the North, Oregon, overwhelming favorite, 38 votes, first place votes. Washington had two. So it's one Oregon, two Washington, three Cal, four Stanford, five Oregon State, and six Washington State. I had this a little different. I had the first three right, but I had Washington State. I think they might sneak up to the fourth, which maybe I'm wrong on that. I had Oregon State fifth, but I had Stanford down at number six. I think I was doing a Utah radio program, and they were asking me about that. They're like, oh, that's a USC-Stanford thing. I'm like, no, I just kind of feel like they're going to fall off a little bit. And they're like, oh, the Stanford fans get on you. I'm like, yeah, we do our podcast, The Champion Show, and those 12 Stanford fans will kind of get on you when you get critical, you know. And last year we were critical of them, and they end up going 4-2 or whatever. So without practicing at home at all, like, that's pretty impressive.
They were a bad 4-2, though.
They were a bad 4-2, but they, yeah. And they had, like, a caller, like a Stanford caller on the Utah show, like, kind of give me crap for it. So,
whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stanford. Blah. I had the North exactly the same.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I had Oregon State edging out Washington State, and Stanford, despite the fact that I think they're going to be bad, still fourth.
Okay.
But I think I had them at 4-8 overall.
Okay. And the South, a little closer. Four different teams had first place votes. USC had 27. They were picked to win. Utah next with 6 first place votes. Arizona State third also with 6 first place votes. UCLA fourth with 1. Then Colorado and Arizona. And I had this exact the same.
I had this pretty different. I had ASU first, USC second, Utah third, UCLA fourth, Arizona fifth, and Colorado sixth.
Wow. Your buddy Carl Durrell is going to finish last.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad last, but it was last.
Like, I
had them still winning some games. I just think Arizona is going to be a little bit better than people think this year. I like the energy around that program.
All right. I did like Jed Fish when he was up there. Good energy from him. Yeah, I liked what he had to say. Let's see. And then Oregon was picked to win the championship game.
Which I also picked.
You also picked, yeah. So that's what I did, too. It's funny. So Kyle Whittingham was up there, and I went up to the podium to ask him a question about conference realignment, just because I'm like, you know what? He's been through it. He's done this before. And it was interesting. I mean, he had said basically, like, just hold on to your seat. Like, this is not over. Like, this is going to be – things are going to be very vastly different. And I asked him if he had any advice for the programs that were moving. He's like, no advice, but he goes, recruit your ass off. So that was all he said. But so he was kind of a good person to talk to about realignment because he's gone through it. And I asked your buddy Jed Fish,
mm-hmm.
if you remember. So Larry Scott comes in, Larry Scott's on the way out. Klyavkov has to basically do everything the opposite. Sumlin screwed up big time. You could hear the players how happy they were when they were talking about, they just love Fish. He's just, he's going to be very different than Sumlin. Sumlin closed everything to everybody.
Right.
And so I asked him, I'm like, when did your decision to open up for camp? And he was like, why would you not? Like, these guys want to play in front of people. He had a great answer. He just kind of went off about why it's important. It's like, this is a game. Like, they could have their parents and fans watch them play. And like, you want to see people practice. This is not going to be some competitive disadvantage if we're out there with an open camp and let the media watch and everything. I want people to see what's going on here. I want to see it. And it was very like reminiscent of Pete Carroll when I was covering him. And I've always been a proponent of that. I've always felt like that's a smart way to go. And when someone like just completely shuts it down, like it's a, Soviet bloc thing, I was just like,
Yeah. Yeah, so, agreed. Full agreement. I think that's it's an expression of confidence, and it's an expression of caring about the fans, caring about it as a spectator sport. And I'm sure it's going to pay dividends. I mean, at the very least, it's going to have more fan interest. I mean, if you make things fun and interesting, I mean, he was talking about what they're going to do with the Zona Zoo this year. Are they going to have it be basically like a massive party during the games with like a DJ and stuff? Like, that's great.
Yeah,
that's so cool. I'm rooting for him. I hope he does well there, and I hope all of this works out because I think it's a great signal to the secret police that operate as the head coaches of the various other programs in the league that, hey, you don't have to do it this way.
Yeah,
Chip Kelly, you can allow the media to watch more than 20 minutes of your fall camp practices, and guess what? You could also allow fans to do it. Because frankly, you've been super bad. Nobody's actually going to your practices to scout you.
Yeah.
Nobody is. You've been bad, dude. They're doing just fine without having open practices to scout your ass.
Yeah. I thought Chip did a good job. He was definitely his sort of like deadpan delivery stuff. One reporter, I think he must have a history with Chip, asked him, because I know you don't like history. And he said, and Chip came back with something quick about that, he likes certain history or whatever. But so the reporter was going into the history of not winning an out-of-conference game.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, you mean like we didn't play any last year and the 2 years ago, like the 2 years we've been here? Like, yeah, that history, that we talk about that all the time. You know, it was like he got on him like right away before the guy could even answer a question. It just like shut it down. And the poor guy was sitting at the microphone. He's like, is that sufficient? He's like, yeah. The guy just like didn't know what to say. He's like, yep. And then he took a question from somebody else. And then the guy asked another one later, but he completely just wiped them off the face of the earth.
It's great. Yeah. I think it's great to be a jerk when you're I don't know, 10 and 21.
But I thought, you know, he was he was paid a compliment by David Shaw, saying he doesn't get enough credit for changing college football the way he did it. And, you know, he was like, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I love it when they're talking about it like it's an in memoriam segment. He's still the head coach of a team in the league. And he's 10 and 21. Yeah, he changed college football.
You know, remember when we talked to Chris Cartman a couple years ago and I like didn't think Arizona State was going to be good. And he was like, you know, that N'Keal Harry guy's good and all that. I was like, oh, I think, and he changed my mind. I'm like, okay, they're going to be better than I thought. The problem is, I heard David Shaw. He seems super confident about his team. I think he thinks Stanford's going to be good. I'm not convinced. I still kind of think like they're going to be bad. But I'm like, damn it! If I don't listen to him and they're good, I'm like, it's going to piss me off.
I'll argue they're going to be trash.
All right,
like not even average. They're going to be trash.
And what else stood out? Nothing really. Like nothing like Jonathan Smith. I like him. I think I was doing something else. I was writing my Klyavkov story when that was going on. So I didn't pay a ton of attention to that.
You didn't find a guy named John Smith super riveting? Interesting.
No. Wilcox was sort of like kind of quiet and some of the players, like I was closer to the players when I was like writing and you could hear some of them. They're having a good time. Chase Lucas from Arizona State, like, dude's got personality up the like, I was like, we should get him on the podcast. Like, he's
cool.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of great players they brought, and overall it was good. It was a good day. So Klyavkov is going on a listening tour, and he started off going to USC because he was already in LA. He's going to USC. He's on his way to Oregon next. So I thought he'd go to UCLA, but I don't know. It's whatever. He's hitting the two favorites in the conference first. But, you know, was out on that. We went to a player-run practice yesterday. We can't watch, but we could, like, watch the players go by and then interview them. And he went out on the field with the players and Mike Bone, the USC athletic director. He met with Lindsay Gottlieb, the new women's basketball coach that came over from the NBA. You know, they took pictures and all this stuff. And we had a – supposed, you know, on the down low, we didn't tell anyone we were going to do a happy hour with Mike Bone, George Klyavkov, and all the beat media could come. And it's an off the record conversation. So I can't like share all the intimate details, but it was overall very positive. And I got to talk with him like 10 minutes, like me and him just standing there having a beer and talking. And like never would have that happened with Larry Scott, like not on your life. And I told David this already, but he'll still laugh again. Basically, the first words out of his mouth were, because I told him I do the podcast with Champions, like, oh, the show that makes fun of my distribution in the opening. Yes. And, you know, the guy's super successful, right? Like, my net worth is like a rounding error for his, right? But like, he's spent the time. That was right off the bat. You know, laughed a little bit about it.
Right.
And, talked to me the whole time.
Either has listened to the beginning of the show or has gotten a briefing on the beginning of the show.
He said he listens to the show. Like, he told me he's like a listener of the show. And so, you know, seemed very encouraged that he, you know, wanted to change that, you know, perspective. And, you know, we already mentioned that, you know, I told him, like, hey, I was working with one of his PR guys and we're going to get him on the show at some point. He's going to be doing this listening tour for the next, like, 2 months. So he'll have time in the offices. So we'll be able to hopefully get him on, but he was great. And I feel like he's someone that gets it. Do I know he's going to be, you know, be able to fix all the Pac-12's problems? No, but I feel a lot more confident after talking to him. Like, it's a guy that knows what he's doing. He knows the mistakes that Larry Scott made and he's not going to like shy away from him. It's not his fault, but there's something to be easy to fix and some won't. But overall, Dave, I was really, really impressed by him.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm looking forward to having him on the show.
Yeah.
Where he can give us both some crap on the record.
But for him to say that like right off the beginning and then continue to talk to me. So, you know, maybe keep your enemies closer thing is I don't know. But
he was I know the Pac-12 under Larry was not super happy with our opener.
No, but we would never talk to like we would hear from people like Dave Hirsch or somebody, like not even him, like he was a higher up guy. Like we would hear from some of the lower people about that. Like, yeah, they're not super happy about that or whatever. Like, I guess we are the only, well, there's a couple other podcasts now, but like we're the main one. Right. And, but to have like the commissioner, like tell you that, I did share a story about the parody thing, with him. I just let him know like where this came from is because of like, we were at the Pac-12 championship game and I think I was doing a show, like maybe Keeler and I were doing a pregame show or something, and Larry Scott was available. And I told my beat writer, Dan Weber, ask him what's more important, parody or college football playoff. And Larry Scott said parody. And like, that's, you know, he hasn't been able to live that down since, and he had to back off of that and everything. And so the fact that the new commissioner is like mentioning parody over and over again, I feel like I'm somewhat responsible for that. Like,
you're an influencer. A social media influencer.
But he was, so all of our POC listeners out there, he was really cool to talk to. And what makes a good, you know, if you're going to be a great recruiter, you got to like listen to people. And sometimes you're listening to a kid at a high school that you're never going to recruit to, that he's not your level, but you don't say, well, I'm not recruiting you, I'm not going to listen to you, because his older brother or someone you might recruit, like you just don't pick and choose who you talk to. Larry Scott would only talk to the presidents at first. He wouldn't even talk to the athletic directors. And that came on later on. And, you know, he certainly wouldn't talk to, you know, run-of-the-mill beat writers for different programs. Like, he might talk to, like, Bruce Feldman or something, but he's not going to talk to you and me or Tracy or anybody like that. And, you know, he's going to go out. Kleofta's going to meet every freaking beat writer probably that's, you know, in the Pac-12 footprint and have an impression on all of them. Some, probably some goods, probably some bad, whatever. But stuff that Larry Scott just wouldn't even do. And I think just making that sort of effort, it just shows like he's going to have a much different approach, which I like that.
Yeah, it's the same thing with, say, our man Jed Fish that we were just talking about. It's soft signs, but it's signs that he gets it. So nail all the small stuff. Like Martin Jarman at UCLA, he's nailing all this, like, you know, relatively small stuff. But when you nail all that stuff, it breeds confidence that you're going to nail the bigger stuff.
Yeah.
And so for Jed Fish, it's winning games. For Martin Jarman, it's hiring coaches. And for George Kleofkoff, it's getting the Pac-12 out of this mess.
Yeah. It's funny. And there's similarities between, you know, Jarman and Mike Bone at USC. You know, they're, you come in, I think USC was in more of a mess, but you come in and you have to fix all these problems, and then, oh, you get strapped with a pandemic. And like, so you're the level of difficulty, you were going to do like a triple Lindy, and now you're going to do a quadruple. Yeah. You got like, it just added to the level of difficulty. And I think the same thing with George Kleofkoff, like he had a lot of problems already with the Pac-12 to fix. And like, oh, by the way, the day you take over, college football landscape is changing, you know, forever. And now you got to navigate that too. So they all got their work cut out for them. But I feel like, you know, I feel like the Pac-12 is in as good as hands as it could be. When we, you know, heard about the hire, and you're like, who? Well, you get to know them. And I like that you went out and tried to find someone that you interviewed, you know, you would interview, like, okay, I get why you would hire him. Like, if I was in the position to hire a guy, like, he's certainly someone I would have considered.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else?
No, I think you were very excited about Pac-12 Media Day. And
it's not spring practice.
Have you discussed it to your heart's content?
I love that you just don't even like this stuff. it was good. I wish you could have come. Hopefully next. So they had their radio row. It was like on the 12th floor, and we were like all on the second floor. But I think next year we're going to have our own
Jerusalem
booth.
Yep.
And then we can get everyone to come by, and we could have sat down with Chase Lucas and talked to him and just said, hey, we're not going to talk to the other players. We're going to talk to him for a long time. I think it'd be kind of fun, and it would be a great podcast. We would just have like little tidbits from everyone across the conference.
We did that one year where we set up our pod in like the corner of the studio when it was at the Paramount or whatever.
Oh, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. But we just talked to like Bruce and Pete Thamel.
Yeah, I think we did that. And we might have got like sound from, I always have like delusions like, oh, I'm going to get sound from everybody.
You did that one year.
Yeah, but that's a lot of work. We need an intern for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Keely's right there.
Get Keely to do it.
She's like, my intern days are long over. So she's basically my boss. She tells me what to do. Like, she tells me when I'm like doing something wrong. No, don't do that. And I was like, damn it. Come on, kid. It was funny. We were at, the workout, the USC player run practice thing. And this happy hour supposed to start at 5:30. And the workout, they thought, would end by 5. Well, it wasn't done. It was like 5:15, 5:20. And there was, like, the website people were at the workout. The newspaper people just went right to the bar, which is, like, maybe a 5-minute walk. So they were going to, and Klyavkov and Mike Bone already went over there. And it's like, okay, so they're going to get a leg up on this. And it's like 5:20, and I'm like, I'm going to talk to, like, a redshirt freshman offensive lineman, or do I want to go talk to the new commissioner? So Keely and I look at each other. We had, like, the exact same thought at the same time, like, get the hell out of here. So I left, and I let her and, like, Shotgun and Chris were there to do interviews. And I just, you know, went over to there. And it was great because I walked in. They're moving from the bar to, like, the private room. And he just happened to, you know, I said hello. And, like, the seas parted, and it was just me and him standing there talking. And the newspaper guys are there. They're around. And they might have already said hello to him. But we sat there and talked for 10 minutes or stood there. And no one, like, came up and, like, interrupted us. I was like, I can't walk away. I'm not going to leave the guy alone. So it was really nice. I mean, no one got as much one-on-one time of him than me. So I was
lucky. Everyone understood the two biggest power brokers in the room needed some face-to-face.
I am the elder statesman as far as the USC media go.
At this point.
That's sad when you think about that.
Like, yeah, well, the shoe fits.
Anyway, but thanks to, if he's listening, thanks, George. That was great. We had a good time there. And look forward to getting you on. And hope you guys like that little recap of Pac-12 Media Day. Why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back because we got a lot of questions to get to. Back in a minute.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Well, I needed that break, David.
How was your break?
I felt like I talked for 41 minutes.
You basically did.
Sorry.
No, it was beautiful. I love seeing you excited about something.
And you could do all
nothing,
the questions.
Nothing excites you more than talking about behind the scenes media stuff.
I do like that. I like the newsy stuff.
You like the reality show version of covering the sport.
But I like the newsy aspects of it too. Like there were some interesting things that happened, you know?
Yeah. Interesting, yes.
You don't find it interesting. Well, you could do all the questions. How's that?
Oh yeah, great.
Well, should we do the voicemails first? That's been our tradition.
Let's do it.
Okay.
As was once the way of our people.
First voicemail, here you go.
What's good, guys? This is Evan from Tempe. I had a question about Quay Helton. I was going to call Ryan's other podcast, but he seems to get annoyed at times when everyone calls and asks him about Quay Helton on that one, so I figured I'd rather do this one, probably should do this one. But I just want to know, like, there's all this talk about Matt Campbell being, you know, in many eyes, the best coach for USC to go and get when the Quay Helton era is over. And, you know, the thought process is, oh, well, look at what he does at Iowa State. Imagine we could do at USC. And I get that, and I like Matt Campbell as a candidate. But, like, weren't we also saying that, you know, when it was Jim Harbaugh, it's like, oh, well, he looked good at Stanford. Imagine we could do at Michigan. And then he totally flopped at Michigan. And then, oh, Kevin Sumlin, look at what he did at Houston. What can he do at A&M? And he totally flopped at the end of his A&M career and then flopped the whole time at Arizona. And then it's like, oh, look at Tom Herman. Oh, great job at Houston. Now he's going to Texas, and then he whiffed. And then it's like, oh, Scott Frost at UCF. Oh, my God. And then he goes to a blue blood, and he whiffs. So it's just kind of like, I like Matt Campbell, and he's definitely one of the top candidates, in my opinion, for the USC job, and I think he's a great coach and all. But are we sure right now that he is going to be, that he is an elite coach and, you know, will kind of return USC, back to being a dominant program? Because I just don't know. I mean, I'm not saying I dislike him or anything, but I just think we've kind of seen this movie a bunch of times. And sometimes it seems like we don't really know exactly how somebody's going to do when they get in that situation with the bigger program and everything. So just want to know what you guys thought, and thank you guys.
Thanks, Evan. I mean, it's not like I don't like talking about Clay Helton. It's just I get that question. I mean, if I go to a cafe and someone knows me, they're like, oh, well, how long is Clay Helton going to be there? Like, you just kind of answer it all the time. Like, you can only say the same thing so many times. You know, like, they haven't played a game since the last time I was asked. So I don't know what else to say.
Well, he can't say anything more because he's been saying for 2 to 3 years now that he should be fired after the season. So for Ryan, it's sort of like, I don't know, Don Quixote type thing.
Yeah.
You know, or it's just,
I mean, I've been wrong for the last, like, don't ask me. Like, I said he was going to be fired 2 years ago and he wasn't.
Well, and like, legitimately should have been several times. Yeah. And he just keeps going. So I think Ryan, when he's answering that question, it's his own, some of his own natural exasperation with just the simple logic of the situation.
It was funny listening to the Audible, and Bruce and Stu were recapping Pac-12 Media. They were both there, and they were like, they wanted this thing about USC and, like, you know, where they could be in conference realignment because, you know, they're a powerful brand or whatever. And he's like, I think the line was something like, look, I mean, even with Clay Helton as the head coach, they're a top 15 team. So it was like, it was just this throwaway comment, like, they have a terrible head coach and they could still be good. You know, like, it was so, like,
but that's the lasting brand there. I mean, it's the floor is really, really high.
Yeah.
Cause they're at the floor right now because Clay Helton's a horrible, horrible football coach. But yeah, as for the Matt Campbell part, yeah, you never know. You never know. But I think it's more just, you know, if they can get Matt Campbell, that's getting a proven guy who's also going to be, I don't know, whenever he gets hired, he's going to be one of the top two or three guys on the market. So it'd be the kind of hire that USC, if you go back through history, really hasn't made.
Right, that's true. Yeah.
They don't do that. They generally are hiring either from an insular position or occasionally hiring on the cheap. So it would be a bit of a shift. And I think it's probably one that's coming. I think the AD hire they just made is somebody who's out of the family. So it's a matter of getting serious about this stuff because, you know, UCLA gets knocked for not being serious about football for the longest time. USC sort of was too. It's just the floor of the USC program is so much higher. But, yeah, like, the hires they were making for a long time were poor.
Yeah, head scratching. And you don't ever know. I mean, sometimes
country
you think,
like, club atmosphere.
Oh, very true. But I mean, as far as, like, hires go, like, who are some of those Boise State guys that were, like, huge, like, won tons of games? Like, Colorado hired one of them. I forget who it was. And
Dan Hawkins.
Dan Hawkins just, like, flamed out. And you're like, you know, he had a lot of success here. You don't have success there. I mean, it happens all the time. Like, players, sometimes it's a situation, you know, like, mm-hmm. You get a guy, like, he's drafted really high, but he goes to a terrible organization. And he's just someone that needs, like, good structure around him. And he's terrible. And then he gets traded or let go, and, like, he gets signed by, like, the Patriots, and he's, like, amazing or something. And you're like, oh, he needed that. And sometimes it's just, like, whatever it is. You know, Chris Peterson had success. It'd been interesting to see how it kept going. I thought that was a pretty good transition from Boise to Washington. You know, Nick Saban had success at LSU, didn't do well in the NFL, and is the greatest coach of all time now after his run in Alabama, right? So, I mean, there's a lot of that. It's just, you never know.
So, like, I've got a name. I've got a guy to throw out there,
okay,
for the USC job. 56-28 all time in Pac-12, right? Has led teams as far as the national championship game. has won two New Year's Six bowls.
I think I know.
Has
this
appeared
is.
In four.
Oh.
What are you thinking?
Chip Kelly?
Sounds like a fit to me. He has, look at this. 43-18 in Pac-12 games.
That's amazing. Is it, like, we always try to look at the last couple years too. I'm sure it's probably trending up, right? Like, the last couple.
Some would argue yes.
It is trending up after, like,
it's trending up from 3 years ago. Yeah,
it is funny. I think Bruce, like, we mentioned Bruce like five times on the show. I think when we thought there was going to be a change before, they mentioned Brian Kelly a lot from Notre Dame and stuff. His name's actually come up at other places too, but he sticks around there.
I don't think Notre Dame would in a million years allow him to just move from Notre Dame to USC.
But I think this was before, like, I don't think they were super enamored with him either. They were sort of
no,
like,
but it's sort of a, that's sort of like a, an ego thing at that point.
Yeah.
You can't let him leave for the rival.
Right. Yeah. Cause it looks like it's a,
well, it's like when John Savage, UCLA's baseball coach, was, they were looking at him pretty hard at USC. for that baseball job opening. Wasn't that like 10 years ago or something?
Yeah, I think so.
UCLA ponied up way more than they want to for a baseball coach just to prevent that from happening.
Ah, gotcha. Thanks for that, Evan. We got another one. I think it's our buddy Perk, if I'm not mistaken. Here you go.
Hey, guys. It's Perk. Just following up on the comments you guys had talked about last week from Nick Saban talking about how much money Bryce Young was making in NIL money. I was wondering, with given the new developments of the NIL, if you guys could ever foresee a situation down the line in which someone in their junior year who would probably be projected to be a late-round draft pick, if you could see a scenario in which, given NIL money, they, instead of going to the NFL draft, just determine that it's they're kind of indifferent or more in favor of coming back to their senior year due to just being able to get money. I was wondering if you guys would see that scenario ever playing out. Thanks, guys.
I think it's absolutely going to be part of the conversation for fringe draft picks, and maybe even some non-fringe ones, depending on what kind of money they're getting. I mean, for Bryce Young, before he's played a game, to be having almost $1 million.
Or started.
Yeah.
I think I said that incorrectly before.
Before starting a game, already having $1 million in endorsements. I mean, what's it going to look like if he's a Heisman contender?
Yeah.
So I think there's... this is college football. I mean, I think potentially getting a little bit more competitive with, and college basketball, potentially getting a little bit more competitive with being in the NBA draft, a second round pick, or in the NFL draft being a third through seventh round pick. If the money starts trickling out to more guys, and we're going to see that. We're going to see what happens with NIL and how many guys are getting, you know, real money as opposed to, you know, 10 grand here, 10 grand there. But if it is real money and it's stable money, I think it's one more incentive for guys to not leave after 3 years.
Yeah. And this is what Nick Saban's saying. I don't know. David Shaw had some funny comments about that. He said, like, Nick Saban's, like, smarter than 10 of us put together in this room. Like, he didn't do anything he said was for a reason, you know.
Yeah.
It's like,
because
for recruiting.
What he actually means there is his coach brain is the most powerful coach brain in the entire world.
Right.
He does not say anything except to further the cause of his program and his team.
Right. So you say he wouldn't, like, not get vaccinated?
Right, no.
He wouldn't let conspiracy brain...
He has truly the most powerful coach brain in the history of the world.
Right. But, yeah, David Shaw had some glowing words for Nick on that one. But obviously that was strategic. We're just not seeing a ton of stuff. There's been some bigger announcements that the things have kind of backed off a little. And not everyone's going to talk about it, you know. Keaton Slovis talked about him signing with Clutch Sports, you know, LeBron James is, you know, where LeBron James is. And, you know, he wasn't focused on, like, trying to sign deals. He's like, I want to play football, but it's just more about my long-term brand. And I think you're going to see a lot of players that are maybe trying to find the right fit, someone that's going to help them with the taxes and with the, what's your brand, not just like, here's the money, take it, you know. Because there have been things of that where, like, they're trying to give money away and the terms aren't good and players have said, no, we're not doing that. Like, that's... So that's what you want. You don't want just this huge money grab and just take whatever comes around. So, yeah, we'll see how that all plays out. I mean, I don't know if the money is going to be big enough in a lot of cases where, you know, can you, you know, if you're a fringe pick, like, what if you sign with a team? Like, it's like $300,000 or $400,000 for the year, right? Like, no matter what, like, you'd have to have a pretty big NIL deal for, like, a fringe player to not want to do that. But, you know, it might be enough where you're like, hey, I don't have to worry about borrowing money from my roommate to buy pizza, where before a lot of the players would do that, or I need to send a little bit money home or whatever it is. And if they can do that and continue their education, that might be worth it as opposed to getting like nothing. You know, you get the bigger payday going in the NFL, but if you're at least being able to get by and you can have a little more comfortable life outside of your, you know, the training table stuff, then yeah, I think that might be a benefit to stay and they want to stick around an extra year.
There we go.
All right. Do you want to start off with questions?
Who's first?
I think it's Big 12 Collapse, Mark.
All right. This is from Mark, Big 12 Collapse. Hello, champions. With today's reports of Texas and Oklahoma inquiring about joining the SEC, this surely would spell the doom for the Big 12. Which schools, if any, do you think the Pac will should go after should the Big 12 collapse? All right. I want to make sure we're leaving no one out, but my first instinct is none. So here, let me give you the list and you tell me. Oklahoma State.
I mean, football, they have T. Boone Pickens is a huge booster.
Where's Oklahoma State?
I don't know.
It's in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Nope. And it's also not in Oklahoma City.
Right. Where is it?
Stillwater.
Stillwater. Yes. Okay. There's a movie out. But they have a very successful athletic program. They have a huge booster. And their football team has been really good. But they're not. It's not going
to
move the
needle. It adds nothing to the league except for a competitive team.
Yeah. It's a competitive team, but that's not enough. Like, right. That's not. Yeah.
Baylor.
They do have. Okay. Hear me out. The only conference that you sign Baylor, the only conference that has two programs where you can do sailgating. Because Baylor's new stadium, you can do sailgating, and Washington. That would trump the SEC that only has one.
Not a fit.
Okay.
Iowa State University.
A lot of success. Matt Campbell.
Where's it located?
Ames.
In Iowa.
Yeah.
No. University of Kansas?
The hoop stuff, you know, is good,
I'm
obviously.
I'm tricking you. Where's it located?
Oh, the University of Kansas. Lawrence.
In Kansas.
Okay.
No. Kansas State University.
That would be Manhattan, Kansas.
What state?
Kansas. Yeah.
Kansas. Yeah, yeah. No, not happening. Texas Christian University.
TCU. That's in Texas, though. You know.
You could talk me into Texas Christian because yeah. It's not. I don't think it's actually super religious anymore. Baylor is, and that would be a non-starter. I don't think Texas Christian actually is.
Do you really? So you think just a religious affiliation would be a...
That's a no-no for the Pac-12.
So George Klyavkov was asked about like AAU accreditations and stuff, and he said that wasn't, you know, a blockade to getting a team in.
He's keeping his options open.
Utah didn't have it, and once they joined the Pac-12, they did. So if you're a school that doesn't have it, it's even more a
that,
reason...
That's
maybe
not
to
a blocker, but they're never adding BYU. And that's the reason.
That's a block. Okay.
And so I think for Baylor, it'd be similar. Texas Tech, problem is Lubbock. That's really it. Yeah. There's not a fan base in the major media markets in Texas. So
they also throw tortillas.
They throw tortillas, games. And we can't have that. And then West Virginia is so not a fit for even the Big 12, much less so for.
Yeah, that's a, you know, Morgantown. No.
But yeah, so unless you're adding strictly for competitive balance, which is not going to be the reason they're adding teams, this isn't.
Right.
Like, none of these teams make sense. I think, honestly, Houston makes more sense than any of these teams.
What if, I don't want to like upset our friend Angie, but is the Pac-12 better if they had dropped Oregon State and added Oklahoma State?
I think it's basically a wash from like an interest standpoint and from a money standpoint.
Competitively, it'd be more competitive.
Competitively, it'd be better. Yeah, I mean, it's tough because, I mean, you could theoretically to consolidate and make things a little bit more stable. You could drop. I'm gonna piss off some people right now. You could drop Washington State and Oregon State, two schools that aren't bringing in much of the eyeballs or the revenue. And just go back to the Pac-10 with Utah and Colorado instead of Oregon State and Washington State.
Ooh.
And then you're probably increasing revenue for the remaining 10.
I've thought about that a little bit because, like, you're basically in this club, right? Like, you're in a club. You're in this, like, Hollywood club. You're already inside. There's a line outside. People are trying to get in. And you have to be, like, dressed to the nines, all this stuff. And you're sort of,
and
like...
And then there's me sitting there in,
you're,
like
basketball
shorts.
Beach attire. Yeah, and flip-flops or something. And you're already in the club. And at some point, they're like, there's like these big.
And
wigs.
I've been in the club for a while.
There's only like 12 seats in the club. So you have to have a seat.
But I've been in there since like 8 p.m. I've made friends with the bartender. Like yes. A couple of the bouncers know me.
But at some point, they're like, we need to get this. There's a supermodel outside and there's no seat. Like,
right.
David, we need you to go outside and we're going to have the supermodel.
You know what that would require, though? What? It'd have to be paying me a lot of money at that point to get out of there.
Do you think that like. Could a Vanderbilt like be like, you know what, we have room for one more good team. Vanderbilt, like, we're just going to let you go. Like, do you think there would be any kind of anything where you're getting rid of or programs want to leave? Like, the bottom dwellers would want to leave.
Yeah, it might be. I think for, like, teams like Vanderbilt, though, they're not going to want to leave, like, the SEC or the Oregon State or Washington State because the alternative is making a lot less money. Even if they might be more competitive, it's making a lot less money. And what have we learned in the last week? This is entirely driven by money. You think Oklahoma, from a competitive standpoint, wants to be in the SEC versus the Big 12 where they're making the playoff every goddamn year and winning the league every year?
Yeah,
no.
Probably not.
Do you think Texas wants to go from being like middle of the pack and disappointing in the Big 12 to bottom of the pack and disappointing in the SEC?
No.
No. I think these are things that are driven entirely by the pie, the revenue, and ESPN. The Big 12's obviously right that ESPN was doing this and
oh yeah.
I'm very interested to see if that lawsuit goes forward.
ESPN like responded today too. They basically are like, we're not doing anything wrong. This is a terrible accusation, blah blah blah. So like
it's, they were 100% doing stuff. Yeah, they were 100%.
I'm like, sure it's behind the scenes. Like, yeah, yeah. It's not like it's not the Sports Center anchors that are talking about it. It's the behind the scenes people that are this would help us.
I just really want all of the email discovery if that goes forward. I really want all of it. I want all of it. I want to read it all.
It would be good. All right. Should I go to Alfred?
Go to Alfred.
OU, UT, and Pac-10. Hi, guys. I don't remember all details of how the conference realignments went down a decade ago. Was the Longhorn Network the only reason Oklahoma and Texas didn't join the Pac-10? I think that was the main...
It was a big part of it. Yeah,
it's a big part of what was going on. I understand why Oklahoma and Texas went into the SEC. Cash money, yo. But do you think they are or might consider the Pac-12?
No.
Well, as of today... They've been, Tuesday, they officially asked to go out with the SEC on, Thursday. The SEC said yes, so.
They checked yes.
Yeah, they're just waiting for their divorce to be finalized and they can get out of there. Do you think Commissioner Kalashnikov is throwing the Pac-12's hat into the sweepstakes? I think he could have if this, I mean.
He probably did. I mean, I'm sure he threw a phone call out there. But
it was like, he started and this was already like. Yeah. Way down the road. Here's some of my thoughts, which may be way off. So I love your opinions. Okay, money. Yes, the SEC generates way more money than the Pac-12 now, but don't you think that if Oklahoma and Texas join the Pac, then revenues, including the new TV streaming deals, would jump substantially?
Yes, not as much.
Yeah, sure, they would, but not as much. And if I'm not going to join a place because, like, well, if I went there, it would be more popular. Like, no, I want to go there because it's popular, not... Because I'm making it more popular.
Because you're a follower, not a leader.
I want to lead. But I want to be, you know.
You want to be leading into a place where they're...
The SEC is already leaders, and they're leaders going into the leading. They're all leading.
You know what Texas will be?
They're going to be a follower.
They're going to be a follower, yeah. You know who Oklahoma's going to be in there?
I don't know.
A follower.
We'll see.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we will see.
They beat Alabama in bowl games and stuff.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah. How are they going to do with that schedule where they're not playing like friggin' Kansas every year?
That's true. They get Vandy. They're like, Vandy, you have to play 15 teams a year.
The SEC has one Vandy. Yeah. How many Vandys does the Big 12
There's
have?
A few, yeah. Recruiting, a quick look at where UO and UT recruits come from, and more come from Pac-12 footprint than the SEC footprint. Wouldn't Oklahoma and Texas want to increase their presence in Arizona, California, and Washington?
They already recruit them well enough.
They do. Competition. Wouldn't fighting for a conference championship or at least be the top 12 if college football expands? If the Pac would be more appealing than trying to compete against Alabama, Georgia, Florida, Texas A&M, LSU, and Auburn?
It's not about competition. It's about money.
Yeah, but he's right on that one. Politics. I've read that the state of Oklahoma might fight against Oregon and Oklahoma State. Against Oklahoma and Oklahoma State being in different conferences. So why not bring Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Houston, Rice into the Pac? Then have four pods in the Pac 16. Great Pines, which would be
Plains.
I'm sorry. Plains. Oh my God. Sorry. Plains. I need a beer. I think Great Plains, Oklahoma, Texas, Oklahoma State, and either Texas Tech, Houston, or Rice. The Mountain is Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, Utah, California, you know those schools, and the Pacific Northwest, those schools. Play everyone in your pod each year and rotate home and home with two teams from other pods. This might be all moot by the time you record this next episode. Keep up the mediocre work. You're right on both counts.
Yes. well, thank you for the email.
Yeah. But it's funny, but I don't think they would go, like the Northwest pods wouldn't go for that. They want to be able to play in California more.
True.
I don't think you can count on that forever.
No.
Because parity, that was for parity.
Yeah, it's going.
Yeah, that's going to go bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yeah.
This is from Ryan in Chicago. Please don't go. If the Pac-12 implodes, you're not going to leave us, are you? Not only are we not going to leave you, Ryan, we are going to maintain the name of this goddamn podcast, even if it makes absolutely no sense. It already doesn't really make sense, but we will keep it. Even if the Big Ten doesn't change its name, like even if all of the like even if, say, like 9 Pac-12 teams go to the Big Ten, 3 remain in the Mountain West, we're still going to cover those 12 teams. Why? Because it's stupid, and that's what we do.
You know, I've thought about this. Like, so essentially,
I just made a solemn promise, so now we can't back off of it.
Ryan, the co-host, consulted in Dave's decision. No, he was not. But I like it. I'm going with it. But I've literally thought about this because, say, we had a Big 12 podcast. Like, what? Like, and like you covered Oklahoma and I covered Texas or something. Like, well, that probably wouldn't work. But if like I was at Oklahoma State and you were at Texas Tech, we're going to still do one. But we would be doing a podcast every week thinking, is this like in The Princess Bride when the guy's on the Dread Pirates Robert ship? He's like, good morning. I'm going to kill you today. You know, every day you think like we're going to die. Like the podcast is going to be over. The Big 12 is going to cease to exist. Yeah, that's what it would be like. And if the Big 10 comes and poaches a bunch of the teams, will the Pac-12, cease to exist? But I will promise too, like if USC, if there's Pac-12 gets poached, it becomes a terrible conference, and like USC is not involved, I'll still do this and to cover the Pac-12.
Yeah, and USC, because they're still spiritually a member of the Pac-12.
No, but I mean, if USC stays or goes, I will still continue to do this.
Yeah, obviously.
Same thing. If UCLA stays or goes,
of course.
Okay. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful.
That
show.
Was a quick one. Do the next one. You've read two like one line emails.
This is from Casey from Tacoma. Pac-12 Media Day. Oh, he sounds as excited as you.
Yeah.
Hello, Ryan and Dave. Salutations from Washington. So in a non-sarcastic way, let me congratulate Ryan on having Clay Helton as a coach and Dave, late career Chip Kelly, as a coach. From what I can tell, these two individuals don't seem to be getting vaccine information from cue messages they are receiving from their toaster. Unfortunately for myself, I have Coach Rolovich, a man whose team last year missed several games and players for games due to COVID, and who now wants to ride the old crazy train to death or possibly killing other people. Below are tweet and initial statement from the Washington State President's Office. So since you guys honestly do some great admin analysis of the college sports sphere, is this nothing or signs that if things don't change, we are booting Rolo, which I am more than okay with after this and the ostracizing of students with the players movement last year. Also, I hope that this doesn't mean that the college students who did go to Media Day have to answer questions on this idiocy. I never thought a piece of information could make me go, maybe Paul Wolf wasn't so bad. Thanks, and go vaccinated Cougs, Casey from Tacoma. And the things he referenced were, the tweet was, hashtag Washington State expects all students, faculty, staff, and volunteers to be fully vaccinated before the start of the fall semester. And then the statement was, as the state's land-grant research institution, or university, Washington State has an obligation to serve the public good and promote the health and safety of its communities. The science clearly shows that the COVID-19 vaccine nearly eliminates the chances of death or serious illness related to COVID-19 infection, and is a critical element in protecting public health locally and worldwide.
Yeah, so we talked about this a bit. I didn't listen to the players because I was always trying to hear what Rolovich had to say.
They were generally pretty positive about Rolovich, his caring guy and all that kind of crap.
And the fact that 75% of the team is vaccinated, that's good, but would they be in the 80s or whatever if he was vaccinated?
You got to lead by example with this sort of stuff. And the fact that they are probably at the very low end for the Pac-12 is not great, probably because of Rolovich, you would have to imagine. So, Casey, my read on this is the president was obviously not happy with this, not happy having to address it, not happy having to put out a statement. I don't know if it rises to the level of something they're going to fire him for, but I think it's one more thing where he's had now 2 off-field issues related to COVID that are black marks. One with the player last year where he was perhaps not the best read of the situation is he wasn't perfectly sensitive to the concerns. And the worst read is that it's a continuation of conspiracy brain versus coach brain. I don't think he's not putting himself in a position. This is what we always talk about, where if you win on the soft stuff, like if Chip Kelly came in and was like super gregarious with the fans and the whole thing, no, that doesn't mean you're going to keep your job after 5 years, but it's the kind of stuff that keeps you there for 5 years instead of 4.
Yeah.
Rolovich isn't winning on that stuff right now. He was when he first started, like he was doing the like meet and greets at the bars and stuff, and I thought was really doing that nice appealing to people. But like, it's a major university. Like Washington State's a major university, and the thing with major universities is that they're going to be they're going to have rules about the vaccinations. They're going to have logical science-based rules, and you can't have somebody who's a major spokesman for your university denigrating that at some level or just not participating in that campaign.
Right.
So I think it puts them on thin ice.
Yeah, and I think if they have a couple bad years, he's more likely to get fired.
I think this yeah, it lost him some goodwill.
Yeah, and I think but I don't think he's going to be fired eminently because of this. Like, you already went through the hard part, right?
They clearly gave him some notes.
Yeah,
and he was reading from a script. So,
but if you were really upset, like, you wouldn't have gone through this really awkward thing. You would have just said, "Okay, peace out." Like, you don't do that and then fire him a month from now before the season starts. Like, you wouldn't have gone through the crazy Pac-12
media day.
Yeah,
it's tough because they also have to manage the other side of that politics, because the unfortunate reality is that there are a significant percentage of people who have subscribed to the Rolovich style of things.
Right.
And so just firing the guy out of hand for that would also, you know, cause a little bit of a blow up and a dust up. I think what my read on it is, it's more the annoyance of having to issue a statement because he made it outspoken. He made it something that he was, you know, I'm going to do this and just say this. And Washington State's statement came out, I don't know, what was it, a few hours later, the president? I don't think they're prepared.
Right.
So yeah. I think it was probably just an annoyance for them.
I want to go back and watch the video of Rolovich at Media Day, because I feel like he might have been blinking like Morse code to some of his, you know, like, don't get the vaccine.
Right,
or something.
Right.
I bet you he did that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'll go back and look at that.
Yeah,
and
yeah. See. But there was a hidden cue message in there.
Yeah. This is Adrian. His question is Pac-16. Hey guys, it's Adrian. Haven't emailed a long time. Love listening to your crazy takes on the Pac-12. So I have four scenarios. For which do you think makes more sense, or which ones do you prefer to actually happen? Okay, so we're going to have four scenarios here. A, we stop Texas, Oklahoma from joining the SEC, and they join us with Nebraska and BYU.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Whatever. Maybe still happens. Okay, fine. Fine, fine, fine. It's a scenario.
Okay.
Whatever, man. He's laying out possibilities.
Okay. We go after Nebraska, BYU, Baylor, and TCU. C, we get Boise State, BYU. He loves them, BYU. Baylor and TCU. And then D, merge with the Big Ten, but first Big Ten drops Rutgers and Maryland, adds Notre Dame, Iowa State, and Kansas, and we drop Utah before joining and make the first ever mega conference.
D's the obvious answer, but I don't think dropping Utah's part of it.
There's all of these are sort of like, wait, there's one, at least one part of it doesn't make sense. Sometimes the whole thing doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no, I think the merging with the Big Ten is the most logical thing.
Yes.
In the long run. And whether it starts as a scheduling agreement or is an actual integration, I think that's the thing that makes the most sense.
And I think if you're merging with them, I don't think they're going to be dropping two programs and you're only dropping one.
Right.
You wouldn't be dropping Utah. You know, it would be Oregon State or Colorado or Washington State or something. But I don't know if you can. Adding Notre Dame, probably nearly impossible. You could get Iowa State and Kansas. Like, you could get those. So
you can get them for like a couple of bucks, I think.
Yeah, like a bag of Oreos or something.
Yeah, yeah.
So I do like Oreos. Okay, the first one, it's like way dumb. Okay, first of all, we can't stop. That's already happening. Texas and Oklahoma from joining the SEC. But Nebraska and BYU. Nebraska, I don't know where this.
That's no value.
Seems very random. The other one also has Nebraska, BYU, but also Baylor and TCU. Baylor and TCU are the next two. Both of those are feasible. Yeah. I mean, you could get them if you were going to let them join. I'm not sure what the infatuation with Nebraska and BYU. And then Boise State is another one. Like, C is more plausible, right?
No, it's not. They're not going to take BYU or Boise State. There's no point.
But if you were to, I think you could get all those. That's the one that you could actually
do. Oh, yeah, you can get all these for a few dollars right now.
And then he says, one last thing. Did Larry Scott kill the Pac-12? No, it's still here. We're still doing our show. By not getting Texas and Oklahoma to join back in 2011, not to mention the shitty Pac-12 network.
We'll see.
I would say George Klyavkov likes the network, likes the content, doesn't like the distribution. I think he talked about that at Pac-12 Media Day. So I think that's fair. And I think I don't know all the details of what was going on, but the Longhorn Network seemed to be the big sticking point for Larry Scott. You know, retrospect, you add Oklahoma and Texas, and, you know, I think Larry Scott was adding those teams but still with parity on the mind and not, you know, hey, Texas is the biggest brand.
Yeah.
They make the most money. We're going to let them do something, and maybe that becomes part of the Pac-12 network or whatever. Who knows? But, yeah, if I think Larry Scott would probably still be here if Texas and Oklahoma joined back in 2011.
Maybe. Or maybe he would have moved on to bigger and better things. NFL yeah. commissioner. All right, so this is a text message. It's quoting two tweets from Klievkov talking. We believe the move by Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC strengthens our position as the only conference with teams in the Pacific and Mountain time zones. We do not believe expansion is required to continue to compete and thrive, but the fallout gives us an opportunity to consider expansion, and we've already had significant inbound interest from many schools. And then the text message says, what weird comments by Klievkov. Looks like we have Larry 2.0. The SEC makes a move with amazing foresight. Then the Pac-12 literally can't make moves that would strengthen their position. So frustrating. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. He's not, I mean.
Yeah, I don't think this is Larry Scott 2.0 at all.
No, this is just, this is how things are right now.
Yeah, and I think you have to accentuate your positives at times, not like only do that. There are some positives of being on the West Coast. There's a time slot that other programs can't play in. Having these two time zones, you're fighting. It's a sport that's, if it had a czar, one of the biggest issues the sport would be facing is we're becoming too regionalized. We're not a national sport anymore. And so, yeah, you need the West Coast. So I don't have an issue with what he was saying there. I think that's going a little too far to say it's Larry 2.0.
Yep, agreed.
Okay, thanks for the text. I think we got two more. This is Frank in Sacramento. Moneyball. Texas and Oklahoma are choosing the SEC TV contract money over future football playoff appearances. Under the new playoff format, either Texas or Oklahoma would have likely made regular annual appearances in the tournament by remaining in the weaker Big 12. Both schools are certainly guaranteed additional losses every season in the stronger SEC. This will eliminate Texas and Oklahoma from playoff consideration, since they will likely not win the SEC championship game nor garner a high final ranking. Frank in Sacramento.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly makes it less likely that Oklahoma is going to be a perennial playoff contender, particularly if expansion takes a while. If it's still four teams for the, you know, a while, then you're going to be, yeah. I mean, I don't see either of those two teams making the playoff out of the SEC. So, yeah, it's going to be tricky. I think for those programs, they're making a decision entirely based on money. That's an element that I don't know that people are considering strongly enough. What if there's like a fan revolt? Like
we saw in the Premier League thing?
Yeah, like Oklahoma just being like, I don't want to watch a 7-5 Oklahoma. You know, that sort of thing. So I wonder if that ends up being... Because, I mean, I don't watch college football to count how much money the program I'm following is making. That's not why people are watching college football. The reason like Texas has like somewhat declining fan interest and people they aren't selling out every single home game is because they've been bad for a while. And that's not going to change in the SEC. It's going to get worse.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, it's the greed on the part of these universities for sure. But also, I think they're losing sight of the fact that they actually have to put out a product that people are going to want to pay money to watch. And if it's just, oh, yeah, Texas might go 7-5 this year, and that'll be a real win because they've got a tough schedule in the SEC, well, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
That's not something people are getting excited about. I think there's two subsets of people, and I think there's an overlap, but they are two different subsets. It's the people who are college football fans and the people who are NFL fans. This is more than the NIL stuff, more than paying the players. This is the professionalization of college football.
Yeah.
In that it's making it a product where, you know, as long as you don't have double-digit losses, you're doing okay. You know, like as long as you're, you know, going 500 or above, you're doing okay. That's not what people sign up for watching college football for.
Yeah,
when they want to, they follow Texas for every three seasons having a dominant year. They follow Oklahoma for every other season having a truly dominant year. You're not going to see that in the SEC, and I wonder how much that is going to impact fan enjoyment, impact fan involvement, and impact the actual dollars and cents of what actually runs the university.
Yeah. I think the other aspect of this too, Frank, is, you know, no offense, but just it feels so somewhat like a defeatist attitude a little bit. Like these are the A players, right? You're A personality. You're an alpha. You feel like you can conquer the world. If you're Oklahoma, you're not going in going, yeah, we're probably never going to make the playoff again. Like you're thinking like, hey, you know, we're going to compete in the SEC and we're going to win games. You know, Texas the same way. I think if you go into it, well, you know, it'll be easier if I do this. Like some people do that. A lot of people do that. But if you're like, you know, Bill Gates would never have done that. He's like, yeah, I don't really want to compete in this space. I just
can't.
Do
you want to know how many times Texas has won 10 games or more in the last 12 years? One time. One time.
I was gonna say one.
Yeah, that's in the Big 12.
Someone
has. It's not defeatist. It's reality.
Right.
They're not
but
going
Oklahoma
to win the SEC.
Is different.
Oklahoma is different. How many? So Oklahoma's been to how many playoffs? How many of those have they won? They've got to have won like a title in that time, right?
They have not won any titles, but they're making
weird.
The playoff. Yeah.
Weird. Is it because they keep getting just shelled by some team at some point in the playoff?
I think it was Shotgun. We were doing our show yesterday. I think Shotgun pointed out, like in the last 20 years or something like that, like Nebraska has as many Big 12 titles as Texas, like something, and they haven't been in the league for 12 years or something like that. I get it. But some of it too is you have that brand because you have some swagger. You do think that you're, even if you're not, you think you are. You're the guy at the bar that's not that good looking and kind of out of shape, and you're still going to talk to the best looking person there because you just think that you're a stud. And
yeah, it's delusional.
It's delusional. You get shut down. But if you're, you know, if you are, you know, Mark Zuckerberg or Bill Gates or whatever, you're not thinking about the easier path. You're thinking about, I'm going to conquer the world, you know, and if they can go to the SEC and win, they're going to be conquering the world. So I think that's what the attitude is. Now, I agree with you. They're not
going to. They're not going to. They're going to.
Oklahoma could.
Oklahoma will be fine. Texas isn't going to. They're going to be not great. And I think the fans are going to get pissed off.
I think they might. That's it. It'd be interesting to watch.
All right, this is from Matt. Longhorns and Trojans equal failing up. Ryan and Dave, it can be argued and has been on several occasions that the primary reason the Pac-12 is viewed so poorly is because USC can't stop stepping on its own private parts. I feel like the same could be said of the Big 12 in Texas. Had the Longhorns simply hired good coaches and coached up the superior talent that falls into their laps annually, maybe they could actually beat TCU and Iowa State with regularity and get into the CFP every few years. Under that scenario, Texas performing to expectations, maybe the Horns are content to stay in the Big 12. Could something similar happen with USC's incompetence mortally wounding the Pac-12? Perhaps the best course of action for the Pac-12's lesser brands, Wazoo, OSU, ASU, etc., is to covertly throw games against the Trojans in an effort to prevent them from failing up into the Big 10. What say you, POC peeps? Eternally grateful for your mediocrity, Matt.
You know, I think I had Bill Plaschke on my show, and I asked him, like, should USC look at going independent? And he was like, yeah, they've outgrown. And I got so much flack from people. Same thing, like, they've won one conference title in the last 10 years. And Matt, I think you know this from what's going on now. Like, that doesn't matter. Like, Texas makes the most money of any college football program.
It matters. It just doesn't matter for money.
Right.
It matters. Like, it matters that USC, because if USC went into the SEC tomorrow,
yeah,
right, USC would be a middle of the pack SEC team,
100%,
and the fans would be livid.
They would be mad. Yeah.
They would be sending letters to the AD. Why the hell did you do this every single day?
But it would force USC to like take the program seriously and hire real coaches and do all that kind of stuff, because now you have more money and you can't just your floor isn't super high anymore because you're the alpha
but
in
we've
conference.
Talked, I think USC and Texas are somewhat similar in a lot of respects. It's not just the coach. It's the institutional problems. Because with Texas, they went out and hired Tom Herman. He was the hottest name on the market.
True. Yeah.
And he didn't, I don't think he fell flat on his face, but he didn't do particularly well there. And I think a lot of it is there's just issues with that program. There's not a ton of patience. There's a whole lot of other issues with like the boosters involved. USC has it to an extent too, and they're starting to clear it out a little bit. But it's these things, they're ongoing issues. USC has not made a habit of hiring great elite coaches,
right,
ever. So are they going to suddenly
great people, like great leaders throughout the hierarchy of the university?
Yeah. Right. And so is it going to suddenly change just because they're making whatever $15 more million a year from their TV contract or whatever it ends up being?
Yeah.
And so that's the piece where it's like it does actually matter the quality of the program you have that you're going into this with, because that's what draws people to the games. Is it better to go? Is it better to be Cincinnati in the AAC or whatever the hell they're in, where they're going 13-0 or whatever, or is it better to be Oregon State? Or is it better to be Cincinnati, or is it better to be what's a middle of the pack SEC like team? Mississippi State.
Yeah. No, that's true.
And I, from a money standpoint, no, it's better to be Mississippi State. But from like a fan enjoyment, building, because these things are also vehicles for the university. When you've got a good football team, it's like a proven thing. It drives enrollment. It drives applications. It drives a lot of that stuff. This is going to have ramifications that I don't know if they're like necessarily gaming out that well.
True. I guess the point would be, when I got a lot of flack from people like Oregon's the one that won all the conference championships and stuff. And like when it comes to like a brand, it doesn't matter. Like that stuff doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that Texas hasn't won forever. It doesn't matter that USC hasn't won. Pete Thamel was talking about this, about going independent, because when Texas and Oklahoma, they announced that they were going to leave, we weren't sure. I mean, you knew it was going to be the SEC, but you weren't sure. Like he said, could either program go independent? That Oklahoma, just being in Oklahoma, that would be a lot tougher for them to go independent. Texas is a big enough brand that they could. And he said, you could flip a coin between you or something like that, between USC and Texas. Both of them are big enough brands that they could go independent. I don't know which one would be more successful, but more successful than Oklahoma. Oklahoma's been more successful. Those are all blue bloods. Oklahoma's been more successful by far over the last decade. But even he doesn't think they would have the power to go independent, where a Texas or a USC could. And Oregon's been better for the last decade. That doesn't mean you're going to be the first pick in the draft of who's going to take a Pac-12 school is USC, and it's not close. Like, it's just not. So when you're giving me crap about all that stuff, like, that's just the reality of it. It's just USC is more desirable. If they have losing seasons in the next 5 years, it wouldn't matter. If Colorado wins the Pac-12 the next 5 years, they're not going to be the first person the Big Ten calls when they want to add a West Coast team. It's still going to be USC. And sorry that sucks, but that's just the reality.
Those kinds of things can change, but it takes years and years and years. So the reason Oregon is talked about as a potential number two now is because of the last 15 years.
Exactly.
It's not because of anything
else. They've worked their way there, and they've had a lot of success, but they're still not.
It's the Nike brand. It's all that stuff. And there's like an element of national appeal now that makes it a little bit more of an enticing brand. That's an example of the success on the field combined with their own marketing outreach and combined with the Nike stuff that makes something appealing, because it's not the market. I mean, Portland, even if you count Portland as their market, that's not a huge media market. But that's why Oregon's talked about this. That if USC was down for, and I'm not right now is down for USC, but I'm talking down. Like if USC went basically, if it had a,
they had like the 5-7 season a couple years ago.
If it had a run like Texas has had, where it's been not just where Texas went 5-6, 6-7, 5-7, 5-7, 7-6. If they had a run like that, but it lasted even 8-9 years, then you could start to talk to me about, okay, that brand is starting to erode.
Right.
And this brand is starting to accelerate. Maybe you can start talking to me about it. But not now, and not anytime in the near future.
They still got 5 stars committed when they're bad.
And it's just, it's taken Clay Helton to drive them to the point where they actually had a bad recruiting class, I think, for the first time in history.
Yeah.
And other than that, though, I mean, that's a... it's a sustainable national brand. And so USC is always going to be, for any kind of foreseeable future, is going to be the number one brand in the Pac-12 and going to be driving the conversation. I don't know necessarily if independence would make sense for USC.
I mean, for anyone, we don't know. But like, if there's anyone that had a shot, it would be like
Notre Dame is the one that we know makes sense.
Yeah.
And the Notre Dame thing is because there's this quasi-religious element to the fandom that makes it so Catholics across the country, to a certain extent, root for Notre Dame. And even that's probably eroded a little bit, but it has that national brand and national appeal. I don't know if Texas actually does.
Yeah.
I mean, Texas, I think it's very, 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 very strong, regional appeal. I think USC has national appeal, but is it as strong and as, cultural as Notre Dame?
No, yeah, appeal? It's not. But having that Notre Dame game does make it more of a national, it helps make it more of a national brand. The screwed up thing about this, and I'm not saying this is right, I'm just saying this is what the reality is. You've seen scenarios, right, of the Big 12 got torpedoed. They're, they took their best brands. This is more about what's important for the Lakers. It's LeBron James. It's not Frank Vogel, right? It's the star player matters in the NBA, not the coach. The same thing we're seeing in college football. Like, Texas and Oklahoma mean way more to the Big 12 than the Big 12 means to them. All the scenarios where people are talking about, oh, what would the Big 10 grab, or what would the ACC grab, or the SEC or whatever, USC's involved in all of them. There's no, they wouldn't be involved. I've seen a lot of like, well, what if they got the California schools? What if they got, the biggest markets, Washington, USC, Arizona State, and Colorado? There's a lot of scenarios that don't include Oregon, or just USC and UCLA, that just the LA schools, you add them. Oregon's been the best program, the last 10 years? And there's a lot of scenarios of pilfering from the Pac-12 that don't include the team that's been the winner.
It's media markets. Yeah. I mean, it's so much media markets, because the thing is, and people keep like, a lot of UCLA fans are like, got big loser energy with this whole thing. And I'm just like, come on. I mean, the reality is the two LA schools are going to be prime pickings at some level for this. USC, obviously more so, but two LA schools, I mean, LA is the number two media market in the country. They're going to want the two biggest brands in that area. Because that's what it is. It's USC and then it's UCLA. It's not like UCLA is no draw in the city.
Right.
It's not like it's Rice in Houston. Nobody's going to a Rice game. So it's those two. I think Oregon makes sense, but it's not a big media market. And Washington makes probably more sense because it is a bigger media market. And ASU keeps, fallen by the wayside, but they're in Phoenix.
Yeah.
That's top 11, I want to say, media market.
It comes up a lot. Phoenix is, it's a growing, it's like Austin's growing, like Phoenix is growing, Scottsdale, all that stuff.
So I think there's, I think some people need to reevaluate it. And also that's why, even though I don't think they're huge in their area, Cal Stanford makes sense because SF Bay Area is like top five.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's going to be driven by things that are not necessarily competition on the field.
And the fans are focused on it. They're focused on, well, we beat you last year or whatever. It's like, yeah, that doesn't, that,
it doesn't really
the TV
matter.
Executives don't care.
And this is driven by ESPN and TV. And I think if the Big Ten gets involved in expanding right now, it's going to be driven by Fox. Actually, this is a war between Fox and ESPN.
ESPN is like, they've amassed a lot of
they've amassed a lot of rights and a lot of power and I don't know. I wonder if there's some antitrust thing that could be levied against them.
It's if there's documentation showing that they, actively tried to
if they actually tried to undermine the Big 12 so they could get out of that rights deal, that would be a big no-no.
Yeah. So, we'll see. All right, we kind of went off a lot on that one.
We did.
Yeah, I did. I never addressed that because when I interviewed Plaschke, and I didn't say it. That's what Plaschke said. I've always said USC should entertain it just to try to, have more leverage or whatever. But I got a lot of Oregon fans just getting on me about how they, haven't won and blah blah blah. And it's just like that doesn't matter.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good stuff. We didn't get any. I got some reaction from Keeley, but not really any kind of, Yeah, she gives a thumbs up.
She's busy looking at highlights.
She's doing
her job.
She's editing. Yeah. She's busy. She's good. She's been good. She's like one of my top 15 hires of all time in the last 5 years.
Yeah, and like among the ones that you didn't immediately fire, got to be like top five, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Keely's been awesome. The first intern I ever hired full time. First, we had a lot of interns coming through.
How many people have you fired?
It's a few, yeah. And
that are still working in media to this day.
There's some.
Yeah.
Being
fired by Ryan Abraham, that's a real...
You could Matt was saying, falling up. I always teased Dan Wyke that I fired him, but I never fired him. He ended up leaving, I think, for the Register first. But Kelly's doing Olympic coverage over there. He's a Lakers beat writer for the LA Times. So you know, I'd have to fix tons of his typos and stuff. But now look at him. He's, you know, he's,
yeah.
I brought him to LA and now he's like a big guy, you know, big name guy.
Yeah. So incredible.
I try to do that. I try to do my part.
Yeah.
Keeley, everyone talks about like Keeley. Like, they're like, when's someone going to hire away? I'm like, I don't know. We'll see. But like, you know, so I try to keep her down. Like, I try not
yeah,
to.
Yeah,
like,
no, but, you got to keep. Yeah. Tackling that ego.
You know, the guy that's in an abusive relationship and he's like, the you know, his girlfriend's way prettier than him. He's got to tell her she's ugly so she doesn't like, think she can go anywhere else. Like, yeah, that's
Keely a really great analogy. I crushed the analogy. Yeah, yeah.
If it involves like the Holocaust or something, I always come up with
analogies. Al Qaeda hostage videos. That was really cool earlier.
Anything goes. Yeah, that's true. That people like the personalities, I guess. I don't know. And they're always mad at Dave. They're not usually mad at me. So I must be doing something
they're,
right.
They're mad at me with love. They're mad at you quietly.
Oh, maybe they just don't say anything. All right. Well, that's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham and Keely Orr off to the side. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Podcast of Champions. Thanks so much for tuning in. And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.